चयन कै गौन राधे जाम कै कृष्ण बाल राम तय गौन राधे जाम गौर राधे श्याम जय कृष्ण बाल राम जय नित्य गौर राधे श्याम जय कृष्ण बाल राम जय गौर राधे श्याम जय कृष्ण बाल राम जय गौर राधे श्याम जय कृष्ण बाल राम जय जय नित्य गौर राधे श्याम जय कृष्ण बाल राम गौर हरि वो गौर हरि वो हरि वो हरि वो गौर हरि वो जय जय प्रभु प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर हर्ष वास गौर भक्त वृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोविंदान की जय श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय नवदीप धाम की जय गंगमाई की जय मुनमाई की जय तुलसी महारानी की जय भक्ति देवी की जय समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय अनंत कोटि नित्य गौर भक्त वृंद की जय गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि बोल ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु ग्रंथ As far as I remember, when we did text 25 yesterday, I forgot who was reading. Remember? Anyway, but he read two extra verses other than what was on the board. 23 was on the board, I think, and then he read two more verses. Anyway, it's all in the same line of thought, so there's no harm in starting from text 25. Can you help me, please? You have the mic? Okay.
Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namani Namaste Saraphati Devam Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Sunyavadi Pacharati Satarani. Hey Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Vrishabhano Sutadevi Pramami Hari Priye Shri Radhika Prana Samam Kanyasim Vishaki Kishikshita Sokya Sostavam Lilami Tinich Taditangamadharim Anangapurvam Pranamami Manjanim Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasani Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Harir Nam Harir Nam Harir Nam Eva Kevalam Kalona Stavan of Stavan of Stavan Gattiranyata Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama So, I want to read a few more of these slokas because they're all basically in the same vein. And although there are no purports, all the way up to text 31 we will read, there's no purports in any of these. But I'll stop at text 31, and then we'll, hopefully, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we will attempt to say something which may inspire pure devotional service in the hearts of each and every one of us by their grace. So here we see how the ladies of Mathura, when they heard that Krishna was coming into the city, they went forth to see Krishna and Balaram, eagerly climbing onto the roofs of their houses to see them, and then starting on in today's verse, it shows how much they were anxious to see Krishna, very similar to the way that the gopis were anxious to meet Krishna at Rasmandal for Maharas. But we will discuss to a certain extent some distinctions involved in the matter of the contrast between the gopis' mood of loving service in the realm of Braja and the ladies of Mathura in their mood, and also in the mood of Dwarka, the queens of Dwarka. To some extent we'll touch on this subject matter. So here we see that some of the ladies put their clothes and ornaments on backwards, others forgot one of their earrings or ankle bells, and others applied makeup to one eye but not to the other. And it's described in the Acharya's commentaries, because actually there are commentaries, it's just that our BBT staff has cheated us by not supplying the commentaries for our edification. But it does mention in one small commentary on this verse that the eye which was anointed was the left eye. For a lady, the left side of the body is auspicious, so it's described that the left eye was anointed, but they didn't anoint the right eye. So, in their haste to meet with Krishna, which indicates that their absorption in Krishna consciousness was all auspicious. So, text 26 reads, if you don't mind, I'll read just the translations. Those who were taking their meals abandoned them. Others went out without finishing their baths or massages. Women who were sleeping at once rose when they heard the commotion, and mothers breastfeeding their infants simply put them aside. So Vishwanath says that the word tut means that meal. I'll just go through it as he has it here. The word sotsava indicates that those who were engaged in such activities as getting married, this is an interesting one, they were getting married. Now listen to what they do. And this will maybe give you an opportunity to see, at least for the ladies, where you stand. That, you know, in the matter of the intensity of your Krishna consciousness. So, those who are engaged in such activities as getting married abandoned the activity Even brides, in the process of being married, failed to complete their circumambulation of their husbands. This is great. It's fantastic. You know, why they didn't include this in our Bhagavatam is so nectarian, relishable. Anyhow, fortunately, there is access. Even while being massaged by their maidservants, they left aside their maidservants, not finishing the massage, not sufficiently completing their bath. Their body is still wet. And then it mentions here that with special care, this pra nitaram indicates that they were feeding their babies with special care. Why? Because the babies didn't know how to take milk because they were just born. So they left such babies aside when they heard that Krishna was coming. So that's the purport to text 26. Now text 27 reads, the lotus-eyed Lord, smiling as he recalled his bold pastimes, of course he's recalling his bold pastimes with the gopis, obviously, captivated those ladies' minds with his glances. He walked with the gait of a lordly elephant in rut, creating a festival for the eyes with his transcendental body, which is the source of pleasure for the divine goddess of fortune. So there's some couple short purports here, if you don't mind. Sridhar Swami says, and whose glances were smiling at his audacious pastimes, because with those pastimes he gave pleasure to the goddess of fortune. He is Sri Ramana. I think it's Rasana. It's hard to see it. With that body, he is Sri Rasana. He, by giving a festival for the eyes, stole their minds. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that with that body, which is full of sweetness and beauty, giving pleasure, giving playful enjoyment to the ladies of Mathura, with that body, giving a festival to their eyes, he stole their minds. Thus, by giving pleasure to their eyes, he rendered them beside themselves, and without them noticing, he stole away the jewels of their minds. So then, the ladies of Mathura, text 28, the ladies of Mathura had repeatedly heard about Krishna, and thus as soon as they saw him, their hearts melted. They felt honored that he was sprinkling upon them the nectar of his glances and broad smiles, taking him into their hearts through their eyes. They embraced him, the embodiment of all ecstasy, and as their bodily hairs stood on end, O subduer of enemies, they forgot the unlimited distress caused by his absence. In other words, they had heard about Krishna, and they had heard about Krishna's dealings with the gopis. And on account of hearing that and not having the opportunity to practically see him, they were experiencing unlimited distress. So it's an interesting thing here. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, they whose minds were liquefied by directing their seeing at him, they who obtained respect by their being sprinkled with the nectar of the glances and smiles produced by him, freely embracing him, whom they obtained in their minds through even one eye wide open, they gave up the distress due to having not been able to achieve him. Now here's an interesting point where Shukadeva Goswami is saying, O subduer of enemies. So he's speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. O subduer of enemies. So the meaning of his using this word, O subduer of enemies, Vishwanath says that O subduer of enemies implies that, quote, by hearing and meditating on such pastimes of the Supreme Lord, your enemies, such as lust, are conquered. So this is an important point. This is similar to the point that Shukadeva Goswami makes at the end of Rasa Panchadhyaya, when he says that by hearing of the pastimes of Krishna with the damsels of Braja, that one will conquer the enemy of lust within the heart. Jai Shri Sri Nitai Gaura Hare Shyam Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. So text 29 reads, their lotus faces blooming with affection, the ladies who had climbed to the roofs of their mansions rained down showers of flowers upon Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna. So Sridhar Swami offers a very short, both of them, Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath, offer short but sweet purports. He says that the word so manasyai means with heaps of flowers, or else because there's a kind of flower called sumana flower, but he says that it also can alternatively mean beautiful thoughts. So the word so manasyai means also that they showered Krishna and Balaram with heaps of beautiful thoughts. And Vishwanath says something similar. He says the activities which indicated the ecstasy of them who were in good spirits, su manasam, are called so manasyani. As the result of such, they showered down flowers, or else alternatively, meaning smiles. So smiles are compared to the flowers, showering smiles upon Krishna. So then, Text 30 reads, which is a little different, but I'm going to read through to text 31 because 31 is very significant. 30 reads, giving a description of the scene. Brahmanas standing along the way honored the two lords with presentations of yogurt, unbroken barley corns, pots full of water, garlands, fragrant substances such as sandalwood paste, and other items of worship. Text 30. There's no purport there, and there's no there is a small purport here, but it's self-explanatory, so no need to get into it. The woman of Mathura exclaimed, "Oh, what severe austerities the gopis must have performed to be able to regularly see Krishna and Balaram, who are the greatest source of pleasure for all mankind." So, I wanted to end on this shloka because this shloka helps us to remember something which previously occurred. Because after all, here we are seeing the situation in Mathura. But don't forget about the gopis, what they're going through. The gopis, although we see here that the ladies of Mathura are delighted to have the darshan of Krishna, but the gopis of Braja are overwhelmed with another kind of ecstasy. In their intense mood of pravas, there are different types of vipralamba. And as it is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, vipralamba bhav is absolutely required for the purpose of augmenting the relishment of prema. Prema is dormant within everyone's heart. And by good association, prema can be aroused, just like fire is dormant within wood. But by association with a greater fire, the fire that is within the wood is kindled. If the fire, although dormant, of good association will contact wood which is wet, then it will be a very long time before that wood can be sufficiently dried out. It may be a very long time. So that the dormant fire within the wood of the heart can be ignited. So that wetness of the wood of the heart of the conditioned soul is compared to various desires for material sense gratification, desires for bhakti, and desires for mukti. So, we have to understand that by good association, we come in contact with pure transcendental sound vibration, Shabda Brahman, which is meant to create a revolution in the heart of the misdirected conditioned soul, so that he can begin to appreciate something beyond the
the temporary happiness and distress of this material engagement. The material world is a perversion of the spiritual world. Therefore, the rasas which we experience within this material world are to be understood to be as perversions of the original rasas found in the spiritual world. So, it's essential that by good association with pure devotees of Krishna, we have chances to hear about the beauty of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna, the glories of Krishna, so that we may be attracted to him. Because it is only on the basis of that attraction that we can hope to begin to experience Vipralamba Bhav. If there's no attraction, if we are not, directed to the object of enchantment by the grace of the sadhu samela, the sadhu sangha, the shuddha bhakta samaj, when these shuddha bhaktas will bless us by the vibrations from their mukha padma, means lotus lips, lotus mouths, which are mixed with the saffron particles from the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna, and which have great power to enthuse devotional ecstasies within the heart. When the pure devotees will, invoke within us a desire to serve Krishna, then we may begin to understand a little something about the significance of the role that feelings of separation has in our evolution to the terrace of prema. So it's very important that we understand from purvarag, which means preliminary attraction with the anticipation of meeting Krishna in the future, to man, prema vaichitya, and at last pravas. And of course there are different types of pravas. Pravas means the feelings that a lover has when her beloved goes to a distant place. There are different types of pravas. There is a short-term pravas, which is seen when Krishna goes to the pasture grounds, for example, with the cowherd boys. So the gopis feel separation as if Krishna has gone to a distant place, but actually he's not gone for long. He will soon return. And the ecstasy that they experience after that type of pravas is, brilliant. But there's another type of pravas which is called durpravas. This durpravas is only experienced within the Bhoma-lilas of Krishna. The other forms of pravas are experienced in Golok, and prema vaichitya is experienced in Golok, and also Man is experienced in Golok, this jealous anger where Radharani refuses to see Krishna, etc. These are also experienced in Golok Lila. And Purvarag is also experienced in Golok Lila. But Dorpavas is only experienced in Bhomalila, because it is only in Bhomalila that Krishna actually goes anywhere to live for any length of time in Mathura and Dwarka. So Durpavas means that the experience of separation with the feeling that Krishna has gone to a distant place, but based on long separation. Durpavas means difficult, very difficult pravas. Difficult to bear feelings of separation, because there's no telling whether he will come back. As you may be knowing, Radharani and the gopis and all the residents of Vrindavan, they were forced by circumstances to bear the separation from Krishna for at least 100 years. Wherein, in a moment separation, they felt that moment to be a millennium. Yet they were experiencing 100 years of such moments after moments. So it is beyond our ability, inconceivable. It's beyond our ability to actually perceive and understand the depths of the implications of the descriptions of their leelas. But we should understand at least this much, that these feelings of separation, when they are expressed in the pages of Bhagavatam, have great power to ignite within us increased intensity in our loving attraction to Krishna. Because whether we understand it or not, the pure devotional presentation of Krishna's leelas are all powerful and all attractive. We may not understand, but we go on hearing and hearing and hearing. And by hearing, we become, let's say, more and more attracted, more and more appreciative, more and more gradually capable of penetrating, entering into at least a deeper scratch of the surface, you know, of the subject matters. So anyhow, I mean to say, we should not forget, as we're reading these pastimes, as we progress through the pages of the Bhagavatam, wherein the pastimes of Mathura, as we are presently observing, and the pastimes of Dwarka, as they will take place, we should not forget the relationship that these pastimes and these moods have with the real intention of the author to augment the moods of Braja. The moods of Braja are indirectly augmented by the moods of Mathura and Dwarka. So we should see the interrelationship. Not that we become distracted to absorption in the moods of Mathura, but we see the connection that that has to our absorption in the pursuit of the Brajabhavas. Because Srila Prabhupada has instructed us in the conclusion of the ABCDs of spiritual life, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, in his purport to the 18th chapter, sloka, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyajimam Namaskuru. In his purport, he instructs that a pure devotee of Krishna should only concentrate his mind on the original form of Krishna, Swayam Rup Krishna. He should not deviate his attention to any other form of Krishna. There are many forms of Krishna, such as Vasudev, which we're incidentally hearing about today. We're hearing about the attraction that the Mathura, ladies of Mathura have toward Vasudev Krishna. But we should understand that it is our real business to be solely absorbed in the culture of Brajabhakti toward Brajananandan Krishna. That is Prabhupada's, let's say, direction to those who desire to become as pure devotees of Krishna. Kevala Bhakti is only found in Braja. Kevala Bhakti means exclusive devotion without any admixture of Aishwarya Gyan. Kevala Madhurya Bhakti. In the realm of Mathura and in the realm of Dwarka, what to speak of the realm of Vaikuntha, there are degrees of admixtures of Aishwarya Gyan. So Aishwarya Gyan means Gyan Mayi and Gyan Mishra Bhakti. So it is not Kevala Bhakti in the absolute sense. So when we say Sri Guru Charan Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadma, this indicates to an intelligent devotee, to a thoughtful devotee, to a progressive devotee, that the Guru is absorbed in Braja Bhakti. He's absorbed in the culture, or moreover, the relishment of the Braja Bhavas. And it is this type of bhakti, unalloyed devotion. There is no alloy of any admixture, of any consideration, of any desire for personal self-interest, personal satisfaction. So it is unalloyed devotion that the Guru in the Gaudiya Sampradaya is relishing, or should be relishing. And it is this unalloyed devotion of the realm of Braja which the Gaudiya Acharyas, at least down to Srila Prabhupada, Vrindavan is my home, don't forget. Srila Prabhupada is a Brajbasi. And Srila Prabhupada wants to impress upon his followers the superlative nature of the realm of Braja and the devotion of the Brajbasis. We should never forget this. So it is important to reflect when we're reading these pastimes. Here we see a situation which was most dreaded by the Braja Gopis. We're thinking, when we read this, that, oh, how very nice. The ladies of Mathura are becoming beside themselves in ecstatic emotional, let's say, fervor. to see Krishna, to meet Krishna. But we should remember that this was most dreaded by the damsels of Braja. As you will remember here, in the 39th chapter, we read previously the gopis are expressing, alas, Nanda's son who breaks loving friendships in a second will not even look directly at us. Forcibly brought under his control, we abandon our homes, relatives, children, and husbands just to serve him. But he is always looking for new lovers, isn't it? The dawn following this night, please remember that this is only one day after what we just read about how the gopis were crying pitiably, crying and crying incessant tears when Krishna was being dragged away from them by Akura, who was appearing to them to be most cruel, devastating their lives. The dawn following this night will certainly be auspicious for the woman of Mathura. Remember, this is the next day we're reading about now. So, all their hopes will now be fulfilled. For as the Lord of Braja enters their city, they will be able to drink from his face the nectar of the smile emanating from the corners of his eyes. O gopis, although our Mukunda is intelligent and very obedient to his parents, once he has fallen under the spell of the honey-sweet words of the woman of Mathura and been enchanted by their alluring, shy smiles, which we just read about, showering Krishna and Balaram with their Sumana flowers or smiles. So, for a real Brajbasi, these descriptions bring pain to the heart. How it is that the ladies of Mathura are now showering Krishna's, you know, mind with their Sumana flower-like smiles, which are, let's say, intended to enchant him to their side, leaving aside the plight of the Brajagopis. So this brings pain to the heart. We should not be so, let's say, it's just like, whose side are you on anyway? You understand? So, once he has fallen under the spell of their honey-sweet words, of the honey-sweet words of the women of Mathura, and been enchanted by their alluring, shy smiles, how will he ever return to us unsophisticated village girls? This is what they're thinking. The poor gopis are thinking. And here we're seeing that this is actually coming to pass. Now Krishna's being enchanted by the smiles. Vishwanath says something interesting. All right, maybe it's Sridhar Swami. Let me see. Yes, Vishwanath. Alas, alas, Krishna, who, because of being the resting place of our love, is the only reason for our being alive, is neglecting us. So why are we blaming the Creator? Remember, they were blaming Providence, who appeared in the form of Akura, as being very cruel. So he's saying that the gopis are saying, why are we blaming the Creator? Actually, it is Krishna is neglecting us. So we should be blaming him, as if there's any other creator. This the gopis speak in the verse beginning na. This is a purport to text 22 of chapter 39 that we were just reading. If one were to ask, quote, why has he broken off such extremely powerful pure love of the gopis? The gopis state that his friendship is such that it is broken in a single moment, implying that no one else is capable of making and breaking friendship like this. No one other than Krishna. The gopis' idea is, alas, alas, even though he has made us completely distraught for his sake, although he has brought us to the verge of death, he does not even look straight at us, his thoughts being, quote, let these girls cry until they perish, but I'm going to Mathura and will enjoy happiness there. End of quote. This thinking by Krishna is because, the gopis are saying, we have now become old stuff. Therefore, their unspoken implication is that he has ruined us both in this life and in the next. So anyhow, there's another point of discussion which I think is important to bring out, and that is that this, we should remember as we are reading these slokas along with this subject matter about the correlation or the interrelationship between the Mathura Leelas and the Raja Leelas. There are some other lessons which can be brought out. We should remember that Akura, why is Krishna in Mathura anyway? It's because Akura brought him to Mathura. Why did Akura bring him to Mathura? Because he was deputed by Kamsa to bring Krishna for Kamsa's intention of killing Krishna. But in reality, Akura was bringing Krishna to Mathura for the purpose of killing Kamsa. It's interesting that although Mathura is being ruled by Kamsa, who is the personification of atheism, still, in spite of the fact that the personification of atheism is ruling the city of Mathura, still, there are devotional elements manifesting in that city. This is interesting because you may be knowing that In previous yugas, the demonic nature was found to be on different planets than the divine nature. Demons were on one planet and divine, the asuras and the suras, devotees, were on other planets, or they're on different continents or different cities. But in Kali Yuga, the demon, just like here in Dwarpa Yuga, we see that the demon Kamsa and devotees are residing in the same city, but they're at least in different bodies. But in Kali Yuga, the atheistic tendency and the theistic tendency are within the same person, isn't it? So we should hear something concerning this principle that what is Kamsa? Who is Kamsa? What is his influence in the lives of each of us? To the extent that we are not purified of mundanity in our consciousness, to the extent that we're not purified in our devotional understanding of things, to that extent, the atheistic tendency abounds in us. Similarly, to the extent that our egoism is purified, to that extent, the theistic tendency predominates. So, Krishna consciousness arising within the conditioned soul is comparable to the birth of the Absolute Truth. And Kamsa is the tendency to diminish or squelch that birth of theistic temperament of a soul. Sri Krishna manifests his eternal birth in the pure cognitive essence of the serving soul, who is located above all mundane limitations. King Kamsa is the typical aggressive empiricist. So here we see that Kamsa is representing the empirical tendency. There are two types of devotees. There are the Bahirmukha devotees, those who present an external facade of devotion, but have not actually imbibed the internal essence of pure devotion. And then there are the Antaranga Bhaktas. So the Antaranga Bhaktas are essence seeking. They are bent on prema. and they are actually infused with the, let's say, appearance of Krishna consciousness in their pure cognitive essence. So Kamsa is ever on the lookout for the appearance of the truth for the purpose of suppressing him, suppressing Krishna in the consciousness, Krishna consciousness, before he has time to grow up. In other words, before Krishna consciousness has time to evolve, there is this enemy of the tendency to, let's say, delude ourselves into thinking that there's any other, say, purposeful goal in life than Krishna consciousness. As soon as one becomes, let's say, intent on pursuing the mundane goals of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, independent of the pursuit of prema, then we should understand that this is an uprising of the tendency of atheism and the various, let's say, counterparts of atheism, aspects of atheism, in the form of the various anarthas personified by the various demons which have been killed by Krishna, beginning with Putana. So the anarthas are the aides-de-camp of the atheistic tendency of a conditioned soul, the Kamsa-like atheistic tendency of the conditioned soul. This is no exaggeration of the real connotation of the consistent empiric position. The materialist has a natural repugnance for the transcendental. He is disposed to think that faith in the incomprehensible is the parent of dogmatism and hypocrisy under the guise of religion. He is also equally under the delusion that there is and can be no really dividing line between the material and spiritual. He is strengthened in his delusion by the interpretation of the scriptures by persons who are like-minded with himself. This included all the lexicographic interpreters. That means those who go by the letter of the law without understanding the spirit of the law. They go by the letter of the scriptures without understanding the spirit. They are more attached to the external form. They're more attached to the formula, as it may translate in devotional life. More attached to the form than to the substance. So the Antaranga Bhaktas are those who are attached to the essential substance, the spirit of Krishna consciousness. Whereas the external devotees are those who are more attached to the external formulae of devotional practices and more dependent on that, generally thinking that my adherence to the rules and regulations in devotional life alone will be sufficient to win the heart of Krishna. But Krishna does not have to be impressed. He has the right to reveal or not to reveal himself. So, anyhow, the lexicographic interpretation is upheld by Kamsa as the real scientific explanation of the scriptures and one that is perfectly in keeping with his dread of an aversion to the transcendental. These lexicographical interpreters are employed by Kamsa in putting down the first suspected appearance of any genuine faith in the transcendental. So anyhow, there's more, but I don't want to take too long today because I'm afraid that I might get the wrath of my senior god brothers, etc., if I give one of my 4-hour dissertations. But still, there's something more. I want to also bring into just, you may or may not like to hear this, but this is in keeping with the same discussion. I'm reading now from a essay that was written by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I read it once before, but I'll read it again. There is no dharma of the jiva except kirtan, the singing of the holy names of Krishna. To the extent that one disbelieves in bhakti as denoted by kirtan of the holy name. In other words, listen very carefully to this, please, because this is where we segregate or separate the devotees, the devotee in us from the non-devotee in us. So please remember how this relates to us, to what degree it relates. If the shoe fits, wear it, all right? You understand? So it's not like I'm pounding on you, but what we're pounding on is we're pounding on a principle which should be recognized by any sincere, serious-minded, progressive devotee. To the extent that one disbelieves in bhakti as denoted by kirtan of the holy name. In other words, those who think that all wants cannot be fulfilled by kirtan to that extent are such people Gnostic or atheistical. So here we have a statement which is kind of an eye-opener. It is a good knock on the head that we should look to see within ourselves how much are we faithful to the principle. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that in the beginning of creation, I sent forth both men and demigods along with Jagya, blessing them by saying, be thou happy by this Jagya, because its performance will bestow upon you all desirable things, both for comfortable living, bhakti, even including bhakti, and for liberation at the time of death, mukti. Bhakti and mukti can be achieved by the chanting of Aparadnam and Abhasnam respectively. Krishna in that sloka is describing the effect of performing jagya, even if it is performed with offenses or without sufficient purity. Even without sufficient purity, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in Nam Samkirtan, because in the purport, Prabhupada describes very clearly that in this age of Kali, it is Nam Samkirtan which is that jagya. There is no other jagya. Nam Samkirtan is the only dharma as described by Bhaktisiddhanta here. And to the extent that one believes that by performing Nam Samkirtan, even if it's done offensively, even if it's done, without sufficient purity, in other words, even you're not chanting Shuddhanam, but perform Nam Samkirtan, because its performance will bestow upon you even the things that the aparadis want. Bhakti, sense gratification, if that's what you want, you can get it. But do jagya. And if you want mukti, if you're a mukti kami, then you can get mukti. As a matter of fact, you don't have to worry about bhakti and mukti. Bhakti and mukti come to stand at your doorstep with folded hands. There's no need to desire these things. Only need is to desire to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Kali Yuga Dharma Jagya Purush. There's no other dharma in Kali Yuga than Harinam Samkirtan. And all desires, if you desire bhakti, if you desire mukti, akama, sarvakama, mokshakama, premakama, what kind of kama you have, what kind of desire you have. Tivrena bhakti yogina, bhakti which is denoted by kirtan, samkirtan. How much faith do you have? How much faith do we have that by performing Samkirtan alone, that all of our desires will be fulfilled without extraneous efforts? So, to the extent that we disbelieve in that principle, to the extent that we resort to material calculations for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, to that extent we are atheistical. We are atheists in the guise of devotees. To that extent. Doesn't mean that we're completely atheist, necessarily. But we have to see, what is our degree of Shraddha? And Bhaktisiddhanta goes further to say, the degree of help one gives in the propagation of bhakti as denoted by kirtan of the holy name is the sole measure of one's belief in God. The degree of help that one gives, that is the sole measure of one's belief in God. Or in other words, it is the sole measure of one's theism. On the other hand, a man is Gnostic, a disbeliever, to the extent that he obstructs kirtan. So, to the extent that he obstructs kirtan, this is a very interesting point of discussion. If you are chanting Shuddhanam, then it can be understood that you're really helping kirtan. To the extent that one obstructs kirtan, what is kirtan? If kirtan isn't the divine appearance of the transcendental Shabda Brahman nomenclature, which is identical with Krishna, what kind of kirtan is it? If it is the semblance of Nam, then it is semblance of kirtan. That semblance of kirtan is in reality an obstruction to real kirtan. There's real and apparent. Those who are doing real kirtan are real pure devotees. And those who are doing the semblance of kirtan, chanting the semblance of Nam, are semblance of devotees. And then there's Aparadnam. So Aparadnam, it may be said that it is obstructing. So it is an obstruction, no doubt. Because the offended name is not the name at all. Srila Prabhupada has written in one essay, which he published in the Harmonist magazine during Bhaktisiddhanta's time, that those who are sinful, although they appear to be chanting the holy name, they are not chanting the holy name at all, even though the syllables Krishna are coming out. It is not the divine name, but rather is a mundane, mayic sound vibration. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta in another essay, Bhaktisiddhanta says that the chanting of the offender to the holy name is like Ravana's abduction of Sita Devi. Ravana thought he had Sita Devi, but he didn't have Sita Devi. He had the Maya Sita. So similarly, the offenders to the holy name, those who are on the platform of Aparadnam, chanting Aparadnam, they may think that they're chanting Hare Krishna, but they are not chanting Hare Krishna. They are chanting mayic vibrations. They don't have the holy name. They have a mayic misrepresentation of Nam only. So, in that regard, it should be noted that, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, that Sri Krishna's name, he says that only the Mahabhagavat, only the Mahabhagavat is able to give the name of Krishna, which is non-different from Krishna. Now this may sound discouraging to some, but we should realistically assess our progress in devotional life. Sri Krishna's name is directly Sri Krishna. It is spiritual, transcendental object, full of liquid mellowness. Nama Chintamani Krishnasya Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. The divine name arises or manifests itself upon the tongue of someone who is favorable towards devotional service. The glorification or kirtan fraught with spiritual offense to the divine name done by those who are inclined towards enjoyment, means bhakti, or renunciation, which ultimately means mukti, is not the pure divine name. The pure divine name and the stage of offenses to the divine name, namaparad, are not the same. The Mahabhagwat, who is free from spiritual offenses to the divine name, and who takes shelter in the glorification of the pure divine name, is alone fit to bestow the name of Sri Krishna. And I might put in parentheses, upon any disciple. So, really, in the matter of the delineation between gradations of atheism and theism, it should be understood that only the Premi Bhakta is truly theistic. The Mahabhagwat, as we previously described, because there are different categories, those who are coming from the spiritual world, those who have achieved perfection, and those who are almost on the verge of perfection, who are sadhakas, they can give the divine name, they can perform real kirtan without obstruction in a truly theistical way, because they have the pure name from the stage of ruchi. One is chanting Shuddhanam. So we are not to pride ourselves that we have become so theistical if we have not ascended to the terrace of prema. We should not pride ourselves that our kirtan is so theistically oriented if we are not doing prema samkirtan. We should be very much aware of the influence of the even ever so slight degrees of the kamsa-like tendencies or the atheistical tendencies, which, let's say, disable us from entering into the true spirit of pure devotion as an essence-seeking devotee. There are load-carrying devotees, ass-like devotees, and there are swan-like devotees, essence-seeking devotees. So we should always strive to become essence-seeking. Essence means prema. Essence-seeking means prema rurukshu, that we are striving for prema, prema, aspiring for prema. Prema means the desire to satisfy Krishna's senses. So when our kirtan comes to the position of being solely based on the desire to please Lord Chaitanya, then we can understand that our kirtan may be somewhat useful in the matter of assisting the predecessor acharyas in their distribution of prema for the benefit of the fallen conditioned souls. There's so many other things that I wish I could. I mean, I've got stacks and stacks. But
yeah.
Okay.
We want to hear more.
Okay. If I think that I'm a Vaishnava, I shall look forward to receiving respect from others. And if the desire for fame and reputation pollutes my heart, certainly I shall go to hell. By giving others the remnants of my food, I shall consider myself superior and shall be burdened with the weight of false pride. Therefore, always remaining your surrendered disciple, I shall not accept worship from anyone else. To regard oneself as a guru of Vaishnavas is an impediment to one's humility. Those who do not listen to the instructions of Shishastika set forth by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are forgetful of their actual spiritual identity, meaning their eternal relationship with Krishna, who are greedy for prestige and material gain, and who are thus anxious to obtain the status of a Vaishnava or Guru to satisfy their senses, can never chant the holy name of the Lord. Did you hear that? Those who are greedy for prestige and material gain and who are thus anxious to attain the status of a Vaishnava or Guru to satisfy their senses can never chant the holy name of the Lord. The disciple who has faith in the so-called kirtan performances of such persons, so-called gurus, so-called Vaishnavas, also cannot obtain the qualification for hearing the pure name. So, anyway, there's a whole list of things that I would have liked to get into. I don't know whether I should. I mean, sometimes I go all the way up to 12 o'clock, but now it's only 9:30. If I went to 10 o'clock, would there be any objection? Yeah, I know. So anyhow, the holy name is the greatest and yet the easiest obtainable spiritual treasure. Of course, that is to say, if it is obtained, it can only be obtainable if there's someone who has it to obtain it from. This treasure is obtained when the jiva simply chants with faith and devotion, not caring for karma, jnana, and yoga. The jiva quickly and easily ascends to the highest perfection by following the method of Naam Bhajan already described. This method is the best method, even better than other methods of bhakti. The basic requirement for successful accomplishment of Naam Bhajan is that the sadhaka must totally shun bad association. Now, this is a very important point. Please remember this point. The basic requirements for successful accomplishment of Naam Bhajan is that the sadhaka must totally shun bad association. What is that? What is it? Anyway, I'm forgetting the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. A Vaishnavachar. What is it? Asat Sangya Tyaga. A Vaishnavachar. There are two things. There's Asat Sangha and there's Asat Sangi Sangha. Of the two, Asat Sangi Sangha is even worse than Asat Sangha in certain respects. So, must totally shun bad association and engage in the practice of devotional service in the company of saintly devotees of the Lord. Pure love of Krishna is the expression of unalloyed devotional service. Only a pure devotee's heart has the inclination and capability of receiving prema. The non-devotee's heart denies it. Prema refuses to enter the heart of one who does not keep the company of pure devotees. The jiva's decision to accept either good or bad association has a powerful and lasting influence on his destiny. So in that regard, let's take a look at something else, Bhaktivinoda. This was from Harinam Chintamani that I just read by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and now from Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Two things should be understood about devotee association. In order that Vaishnav aparadam, offenses to the Vaishnavas, are not committed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us warnings in this regard. The devotee should give up the association of the devotee pretender. So, are we pretending to be devotees? Or are we actually trying our level best to be devotees? Or are we, because Prabhupada says trying means not doing, or are we actually devotees? This we should see. What is our position? This requires a little honest introspection only, which is based on a real desire for a spiritual upliftment. The devotee should give up the association of the devotee pretender. That includes, we should give up the association of the internal devotee pretender if that atheistic tendency is still lingering in our hearts. Understanding him, the devotee pretender, to be a materialist. Towards those who are sincere, the devotee should offer service and respect. Meeting a true Vaishnava, the devotee should associate with him and serve him with his heart. To the people who are favorable to the Vaishnavas, he should show respect. This respect is an external service. These sympathetic people are of three types. Those who fully accept the Vaishnava conclusions but are not practicing themselves. You know, how many of us are really practicing? How many of us, which category, you know, are we associated with? We fully accept, okay, we fully accept the Vaishnava conclusions, but to what extent are we practicing them? You see? Here we go again. Extent, degrees. The degrees of atheism and theism, demoniac and divine natures within our own hearts. Those who take up Vaishnav signs, meaning Tilak, Kantimala, and etc., and appearance, those who take up Vaishnava signs and appearance and act as if they are Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis, but are not real Vaishnavas with genuine faith, though they have respect for the real Vaishnavas, that's another category of sympathizers that we should show some kind of external respect to. Those who are born in the family of great Vaishnava acharyas and wear the signs of Vaishnavas but are not real Vaishnavas. So these are the three categories of, let's say, apparent devotees who are sympathizers or sympathetic towards the real devotees. A true Vaishnava is measured by the degree of purity, depth of devotion, and capacity to inspire others. Of course, this inspiration should be understood to mean to inspire others to pursue pure devotional life, not to inspire others to pursue mundane sense gratification, because you can be inspired one way or the other. So, a person attains the status of a real Vaishnava as soon as just a little pure devotion appears in the heart. If a person respects and takes association of the non-Vaishnava in the way that he respects the true Vaishnava or the ordinary Vaishnava, his devotion will decrease. In other words, it is possible to lose one's devotional or Krishna consciousness by falling into bad association. Thus, among those who wear the Vaishnava marks and appear to be Vaishnavas, certain ones mentioned below, namely false Vaishnavas, should be avoided. These people should be given the respect due all human beings, that is part of the secondary rules, but they should not be accepted or respected as real Vaishnavas. If they happen to become pure devotees, then they also are qualified for association with other pure devotees. The false Vaishnava should be avoided completely. False Vaishnavas are those who wear the Vaishnava marks for cheating, those who identify themselves as followers of the Vaishnava acharyas for the purpose of introducing Advaita philosophy to the Vaishnavas, and those who advertise themselves as Vaishnavas to gain money, position, popularity, name and fame, and other material enjoyments. You should not discuss topics of rasa with anyone except affectionate persons who have realization of rasa of a similar nature as one's own. So, anyhow, there's more. Those who chant are of two types, Bharavahi, meaning load-bearer, I touched on this earlier, and Sadagrahi, essence drinker. Those who are attached to the material world, to bhukti and mukti, become taxed with the heavy burden of trying to attain dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. They do not know about the essence that is prema. Thus, these people, though they labor hard, do not become spiritually elevated by their chanting. That means they're chanting. Snik, snik, ram, ram. They're chanting. But they're not becoming elevated by their chanting, because they're bearing the load of their desires to pursue the fruits of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Those who understand the essence, aim for prema, and very quickly attain their desired end. These are the devotees aspiring for prema. They will very quickly attain prema and become natural paramahansas, drinking the nectar of the holy name continuously. If the Bharavahis, or load-bearing devotees, learn to appreciate the essence, then they too can quickly become aspirants of prema. On the strength of performing many actions favorable to devotion over many lifetimes, faith in the process of bhakti eventually arises. This faith, through association of devotees, yields taste, ruchi. By chanting in the association of pure devotees, sudden bhakti directed toward prema arises. If by the mercy of those pure devotees, the candidate accepts the correct practice of chanting, very quickly the person comes to the stage of aspiring for prema. If, however, here it is. If, however, the aspirant takes instruction from mixed devotees or semi-devotees, it will be difficult for them to attain prema. They cannot become fully surrendered devotees if they take instructions from mixed devotees or semi-devotees, as sinful impressions still influence such devotees. They do not appreciate the pure devotees. Crookedness appears, and their hearts become deceptive. In this condition, the practitioners must spend many births as neophytes, Kanishta Adhikaris, many births. So this means that we should be a little careful about with whom we associate, from whom we accept instructions. Though the Kanista Adhikaris have faith, it is very tender, swayed often by material temptations. The devotees and guru with whom they associate are of the same type. So anyhow, there's more, but I think that I would like to maybe wrap it up now with this quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, which basically summarizes the whole last part of our discussion. The world stands in no need of any reformer. You may be remembering this, because this was a very profound one that I very much appreciated. The world has a very competent person for guiding its minutest happenings. The person who finds that there is scope for reform of the world himself stands in need of reform. The world goes on in its own perfect way. No person can deflect it from but the breadth of a hair from the course chalked out for it by Providence. When we perceive any change being actually affected in the course of events of this world by the agency of any particular individual, we also know very well that the agent possesses no real power at any stage. The agent finds himself driven forward by a force belonging to a different category from himself. The course of the world does not require to be changed by the activity of any person. What is necessary is to change our outlook to this very world. This was done for the contemporary generation by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It could be known only to the recipients of his mercy. The scriptures declare that it is only necessary to listen with an open mind to the name of Krishna from the lips of a bona fide devotee. As soon as Krishna enters the listening ear, Krishna clears up the vision of the listener so that he no longer has any ambition of ever acting the part of a reformer of any other person, because he finds that nobody is left without the very highest guidance. It is therefore his own reform, by the grace of God, whose supreme necessity and nature he is increasingly able to realize by the eternally continuing mercy of the Supreme Lord. So the point is doctor, heal thyself. We pride ourselves to be preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement. But how far have we gone to come to the absolute perfection of theism? Religious mentors very often fall into the trap of, let's say, you can say that there's a saying that there's no one more righteous than a reformed prostitute. So sometimes we fall into that kind of category. But to what extent have we actually been reformed? To what extent have we actually reformed ourselves? To that extent, we can actually do the real work of preaching Krishna consciousness overflowing of the prema from our hearts. So, just one more thing, if you don't mind, one more thing. Thank you very much for staying so long and listening. I appreciate your eagerness to hear something, whatever it may be that comes out of this. Hare Krishna. I'm going back to our first point of today's class just a little bit because I wanted to end it on this note about how we should remember the plight of the gopis in the course of our progress through the Mathura Leelas and Dwarka Leelas. This is Srimati Radharani speaking to the bumblebee. You foolish bumblebee, you are trying to satisfy me and get a reward by singing the glories of Krishna. This is from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. So, because I wanted to end on Srila Prabhupada's words. You are trying to satisfy me and get a reward by singing the glories of Krishna. But it is a useless attempt. Remember that how we previously discussed the gopis were fearing Krishna being, let's say, captivated by the smiles of the ladies of Mathura. So here Radharani's going to give expression to something which is related to this whole point. We are bereft of all our possessions. We are away from our homes and families. We know very well about Krishna. We know even more than you. So whatever you make up about him will be old stories to us. Krishna is now in the city and is better known as the friend of Arjuna. He now has many new girlfriends who are no doubt very happy in his association. Because the lusty, burning sensation of their breast has been satisfied by Krishna, they are now happy. If you go there and glorify Krishna, they may be pleased to reward you. You are just trying to pacify me by your behavior as a flatterer, and therefore you have put your head under my feet. But I know the trick you are trying to play. I know that you are a messenger coming from an even greater trickster, Krishna. Therefore, please leave me. I can understand that you are expert in reuniting two opposing parties, but at the same time, You must know that I cannot place my reliance upon you, nor upon your master Krishna. We have left our husbands, children, and relatives only for Krishna, yet he did not feel any obligation in exchange. He has left us for lost. Do you think we can place our faith in him again? We know that Krishna cannot live for a moment without the association of young women. That is his nature. He is finding difficulty in Mathura because he is no longer in the village among innocent cowherd girls. He is in the aristocratic society and must be feeling difficulty in making friendship with the other young girls. Perhaps you have come here to canvass again or to take us there, but why should Krishna expect us to go there? He is greatly qualified to entice all other girls, not only in Vrindavan or Mathura, but all over the universe. His wonderfully enchanting smile is so attractive, and the movements of his eyebrows are so beautiful that he can call for any woman from the heavenly, middle, or plutonic planets. Even Mahalakshmi, the greatest of all goddesses of fortune, hankers to render him some service. In comparison to all these women of the universe, what are we? We are insignificant. So that is the mood of Srimati Radharani in her Mahabhav speeches when Uddhava came to deliver the message to the gopis. First, she's saying that he has many new girlfriends and is no doubt very happy in those new girlfriends are no doubt very happy in his association. And then the very next paragraph, she's saying that he must be having difficulty making friendship with these other girls because they're sophisticated city girls. They're not, you know, simple, innocent village girls who can easily be taken advantage of like we were. So anyway, Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes, Mataji. Here, here's the mic here. You want to understand whether or not you've heard the pure holy name from a Mahabhagwat. In other words, whether or not you've recognized. How is it possible to recognize the Mahabhagwat? Well, one answer could be this, and I think it's probably an important answer also. In certain respects, it takes one to know one. Because, in other words, unless one is sufficiently purified, then one's vision will not be sufficiently clear to assess or see things in proper perspective. In other words, the spiritual intelligence has to be considerably matured before proper decision making could come about. So that requires, let's say, a significant increase in one's accumulation of sukriti due to, as we were making the point, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur was making the point earlier, due to previous lifetimes of pious activities associated with bhakti, faith in the chanting of the holy name arises, faith in pure devotional association arises. But we should understand that along with the increases, the increments in faith, also comes increments in spiritual intelligence. So it is very doubtful that any neophyte is going to be able to truly recognize a Mahabhagwat based on true, let's say, spiritually surcharged intellect. So therefore, a neophyte devotee, unless he's specifically favored, you know, by his or her destiny, so to speak, which has been created by his previous accumulation of bhakti-mukhe sukriti. If a devotee is favored, a neophyte is favored, then he may have the eligibility to be graced by the appearance of a Mahabhagwat in his life, even though that neophyte doesn't have the ability to recognize. It should be seen that it is on the basis of the inability for the neophyte to recognize the Mahabhagwat, and actually recognition means taking seriously. Someone may think that, oh, well, he's very great, but he's not taking it seriously because he doesn't realize the magnitude of the greatness. So therefore, it's possible for such neophytes, even after having attained this association of a Mahabhagwat, to leave that association or to do offense to the feet of the Mahabhagwat, and thereby waning moon of devotional service, or the waning moon of rati, or spiritual attachment, manifest and becomes, let's say, gradually to the point of nil, even, depending on such offenses. That is because of the neophyte's inability to recognize the value of the association of the Mahabhagwat. So unless one is considerably advanced, that is why on the Madhyam platform, Madhyamadhikari platform, it is understood that the Madhyamadhikari, of course there's different levels of Madhyamadhikari also, so we should understand as well that there are degrees of capability to actually ascertain the position of anyone. But in general, the characteristic of the Madhyamadhikari is that he is able to recognize, you know, Krishna. He's able to he has prema for Krishna, of sorts, prema, as described. And he has, he recognizes the devotees of Krishna. And in recognizing the devotees of Krishna, he sees that there's three categories of devotees: those who are accepting the name, those who are, having the spiritual initiation, diksha, having received the diksha mantras and are engaged in the worship of the deity, and then those uttamadhikaris who are devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So That's another, you know, we can see how far one has become freed from the tendency to be absorbed in fault finding. That is another way you can, let's say, assess to some extent by inference. But you know, generally speaking, to delineate means that you have to have a sufficient background of Shastric knowledge. You have to have sufficient, let's say, background of Sukriti by which you can penetrate, you know, to which degree the depths of the meanings, the spirit of the Shastric principles. So it is not so easy, you know. Erup Brahmanda Brahmite Kon Bhagyavan Jeev. If one is fortunate, Bhagyavan, then Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bish. Then by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. But those two things are there. One is fortune. If one is fortunate, then even he may not be able to recognize, but he can still be the object of the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Guru meaning qualified Guru, Mahabhagwat Guru, who are chanting Shudanam, who are at least sadhakas at the stage of Ruchi, as we previously described. Madhyamadikaris, who are chanting the pure name, aspiring for prema. He is also eligible to bestow the name as a third-class Mahabhagwat. There's third-class, second-class, first-class Mahabhagwat. So, and as far as ascertaining who is Hare Krishna, who is even on the platform of third class Mahabhagwat, then we have to see what are the symptoms of a devotee who has attained the stage of Ruchi. I might be able to find it real quick. Let me see. Here's one thing which recognize some things by inference. Here it says the intermediate introspective jiva or the madhyam adhikari Vaishnava is a pure devotee and is very firmly situated in devotional service. As for the uttam or advanced introspective jiva, so much can be said about him. He has reached a state of perfect equanimity. One cannot become truly introspective without first being situated in knowledge of the equal position of the holy name and Krishna himself. The introspective jiva automatically has a single-minded faith in the Supreme Lord. Hence, he is entitled to chant the holy name purely. So, but anyway, that the other point that I wanted to bring out, which I'm not going to look for, is where Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, in his Nam Bhajan section, he says that the Madhyam Adhikaris, they chant the holy name of the Lord incessantly. The Madhyam Adhikaris, that is the mark of their nishta, their steadiness. That is the mark of their nishtata bhajan, is that they chant the holy names of the Lord up to 192 rounds daily. Now, it doesn't mean that only those who are chanting 192 rounds daily can be seen as Madhyam Adhikaris. But the point is that who has pure name, you know, only can be the relisher of Nam. And as such, the proof that he's relishing Nam is that the devotee doesn't want to give up the association of Nam even for a moment. That's the proof that he's relishing Nam. So we can see, you know, who's relishing Nam, if we have chance to associate, to see whether or not he's, you know, to what, you know, how much is he chanting Hare Krishna? How absorbed is he in Nam Bhajan? How interested is he in Sankirtan Jagya? You know, so. Otherwise, you know, it is only by the grace of the Mahabhagwat, by his mercy, can one recognize. It's not that there's any particular formula, even. The formula is that do in this lifetime so as to increase the accumulation of sukriti acquired from previous lifetimes, so that one's spiritual intelligence becomes more and more devotionally inclined. Then on the basis of that devotional inclination, a Mahabhagwat may choose to reveal his preeminent position to that devotee who has that devotional disposition. Otherwise, it's just like Krishna says, Bhaktya mam abhijananti yavanyas chastami tatvataha. How you can recognize Krishna, or how you can recognize the pure representative of Krishna, purely elevated Mahabhagwat, is only through devotional disposition. When Krishna sees, or the Mahabhagwat sees, that devotional attitude, then the Mahabhagwat or Krishna becomes pleased to reveal the truth about his position. It is not possible to just, take any, external formula by which one can recognize the Mahabhagwat. That may help to answer the question. Hare Krishna. You have to speak louder, please. Did I say that? Is it true? Are you asking? What I read was that it is very difficult to attain prema. But difficult means, as was pointed out, that one may remain chanting for many lifetimes and not make spiritual advancement. Because it's just like if I have an apple, I can give you an apple, I can't give you a mango. You understand? So if someone is having an apple, you know, or having a rotten banana, you know, but he doesn't have a mango, how is he going to give you a mango? In other words, if I'm not chanting the pure name, then how is anyone going to hear the pure name from my lips? That doesn't mean that because I'm not chanting the pure name, that no one's chanting the pure name. If I'm not chanting the pure name, then you can hardly expect to hear the pure name. It is the pure name which gives prema. Pure name means nijas sarva shaktis. All the shaktis means sarup shakti, ladini shakti, Krishna's antaranga shaktis, bhakti shakti, guru shakti. All shaktis are inclusive. So the pure name is only that pure name which is imbued with the antaranga shaktis of Krishna, spiritual potencies of Krishna, can ignite the fire, as we described before, dormant within the wood of the conditioned soul, the fire of prema, prema bhakti. If I cannot give you a seed, if I give you, just like if I give you a plastic mango seed, will the plastic mango seed ever give you, ever sprout and grow into a mango tree and produce mango fruits? So the semblance of nam is not nam. If someone is chanting the semblance of nam, then he can help to purify the heart of the hearer of material contamination, but he cannot infuse prema. Because the semblance of nam is devoid of Krishna's antaranga shaktis. And the offended name is completely mundane, sound vibration. So how can you give prema? If someone is an offender, if someone is a Vaishnava aparadi, or if someone is prone to sense gratification, even though he may be, let's say, masquerading as a sannyasi or, you know, a guru of with many disciples or followers, in this way, but if there's proneness towards sense gratification, then we can hardly think that devotee is chanting the pure name. But we should be careful, you know, in our decision making. So, to finish the answer to your question, which will probably answer the question that you're just going to ask, if you have not heard the holy name from a pure devotee of Krishna, then it is highly unlikely that in this lifetime you will ascend to the terrace of prema. However, we should not neglect to observe that there isn't anyone in the society, the International Society of Krishna Consciousness and beyond for that matter, who have not heard the recorded kirtans of Srila Prabhupada. Now, some people may argue that the material machinery cannot represent the Shabda Brahman. But I say, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagno, Brahmanahutam. All these things regain their spiritual, transcendental position. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport to that verse in the fourth chapter of Gita, he says that spirit covered by ignorance is maya or illusion, material. And matter or maya, matter which is reabsorbed as per jagya in Krishna consciousness, regains its intrinsic spiritual nature. So the tape recorder, which is engaged in playing Srila Prabhupada's cassette, is not a material machine. The dictaphone, which was used by Srila Prabhupada to propagate Krishna consciousness, as per the method of Brihad Mridanga, Brihad Kirtan, recorded Kirtan in the form of his cassettes and in the form of his books, etc. These are not mundane instruments. Even the printing press, Dainapan, in Japan, their printing press, when it was being engaged in the production of Srila Prabhupada's books, it was not mundane, it was spiritual. Because it was not being used by the printer, it was being used by Srila Prabhupada. That has to be understood. The neophyte devotee, he may be a materialistic devotee. He may be bent on sense gratification of various kinds. But if he turns on the machine, it's not that he's using the machine. He is prompted by Super Soul within the heart to act as an instrument for Srila Prabhupada to do his preaching work through the medium of that machine, which is purely spiritual on account of its absorption in yogya, transcendence. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. So how much more living still and sound can you have than hearing Srila Prabhupada's recorded kirtan? Srila Prabhupada was not chanting Shudanam. He was chanting Premanam. You know, so there's no question. Anyone who, just like, you know, with all due respect to people who have different opinions, because there are people who have different opinions, but honestly speaking, I personally don't care for them and their opinions. With all due respect to them, though, I would venture to say that if Srila Prabhupada deemed it feasible to initiate me as I was initiated by Srila Prabhupada, I received the Gayatri Mantras via media, the recorded cassette, into my ear. Srila Prabhupada deemed this process as a viable method of initiating his disciple or giving the diksha to his disciple. Do you mean to tell me that I have not heard that my initiation is not bona fide? Do you think that Srila Prabhupada was so less intelligent that he would have, misunderstood the matter of application of Krishna's energies in the propagation of Krishna consciousness, as to make a mistake in the matter of his initiations through the recording on the cassettes? If I'm to accept that Srila Prabhupada was correct in his understanding, which I cannot think otherwise, but if I'm to accept that, then I have to accept that my mantra diksha from Srila Prabhupada was bona fide, perfect and complete to the extent that I was receptive, to the extent that I planted that mantra into my heart. He gave me the mantra through my ear, but it takes my willful planting also. That is receptivity of the disciple. The powerful guru and the receptive disciple, both are required. So if I'm to accept that my initiation, my mantra diksha from Srila Prabhupada is bona fide, because otherwise I have to accept it is not bona fide, which means that I have not received diksha, which means that I have to go looking here and there for someone to give me the real diksha if I want to get diksha. Hare Krishna. But if I'm to accept that my mantra diksha is a bona fide mantra diksha, then I have to also accept that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is being broadcast, because there's no vidhi in the matter of broadcasting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, as there is in the matter of dissemination of the Diksha Mantras. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama.
Just one minute.
Let me finish this point, okay? And if I'm to accept that, because the hearing of the Gayatri Mantra can only be from the mouth of the disciple from the mouth of the guru to the ear of the disciple. It is secretly done. It is not broadcast. Gayatri Devi curses upon anyone who will chant the Gayatri Mantram, whichever Gayatris they may be, because there are different Gayatris. But she curses upon the chanter of the Gayatri Mantra who does so without having received it from a bona fide disciplic guru in disciplic succession. And without blessings of that guru to perfect the chanting of the mantra. Those two things have to be there from the side of the bona fide guru, who is the initiator. The initiator has to be receiving his mantram through sampradaya, otherwise there's no fruit in the chanting of the mantra. So, and he has to give that mantra with blessings to the disciple to perfect the chanting of the mantra. If the disciple chants the Gayatri without receiving it from the disciplic guru with blessings to perfect that mantra, then the disciple goes to hell. Gayatri Devi curses such a person to go to hell. No. You didn't understand. The disciple must only chant the Gayatri Mantra when he has received it through sampradaya, with the blessings of the sampradaya. In other words, if the guru gives the mantra through sampradaya, naturally he's going to give blessings. Otherwise, what is the meaning of the initiation? So there are some vidhis. In the Pancharatrika system, there are some vidhis which have to be observed in the matter of dissemination of the Gayatri Mantram. But in the broadcasting of Harinam, there are no such rules and regulations. Harinam may be broadcast far and wide. That is Sankirtan. Of course, who is given the initiation into the holy name should be a proper candidate also. He should not be a cheating so-called disciple. But as far as Nam Sankirtan is concerned, Prabhupada has mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the purport to the sloka which describes the incident where Mahaprabhu instructed the disciples of the Buddhist who was offering the plate of uneatables to Mahaprabhu. So, and the eagle picked up the plate and dropped it on the head of the Buddhist and knocked him out. So Mahaprabhu told to the disciples of that Buddhist guru that if you will chant the Hare Krishna mantra, he gave this mantra, into the ears of your guru, then he will revive. So in this way, he initiated the disciples of the guru into the chanting of the holy name, and the disciples in turn initiated their own guru and became the guru of their guru. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that in major cities all over the world, the devotees of ISKCON are broadcasting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra by performance of Sankirtan Jagya. Then he says, by this loud chanting of the holy name of Krishna, everyone is initiated into the chanting of the holy name. So in this way, we can understand that the mantra, the Maha Mantra, the dissemination of Maha Mantra, it may be broadcast far and wide. That's why we hear practically in every ISKCON temple, you know, Hare Krishna, bum 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 bum, you know, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. We hear Prabhupada chanting Maha Mantra, you know, and various other bhajans, etc. So if we're hearing this Maha Mantra, this is Prabhupada's broadcasting. And although there's not a formal initiation, actually, Sankirtan is part of the Bhagwat system, the congregational chanting. There is no need really for any formal initiation. But everyone can advantage the pure, unadulterated, premic sound vibration of Srila Prabhupada's chanting of the holy names as it has been broadcast via media, the modern information retrieval systems. You understand? The same principle applies. The Bhagwat system is not a bodily affair. The dissemination of transcendental knowledge. Who does not access Rupa Goswami by reading Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Ujjala Nilamani? Who does not access the association of Raghunath Das Goswami by reading Madhurya Kadam, is it? Yeah. Huh? Stavavali? Not Madhurya, that's Vishwanath. Who does not access Vishwanath? Who does not access Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami by reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, by reading Govinda Lilamrita, etc.? Who does not access them? It is not a bodily affair. So we should rest assured that if we have the receptivity, we're in the right place to get something solid. In spite of the fact that there may be, let's say, lesser grade association, you know, in the fold of the devotional society. But one should understand that if we can recognize that a particular person, particular devotee, is, let's say, attached to mundane aspects of the Krishna consciousness movement or parent external, you can say, because you can get the Krishna consciousness movement is like a desire tree. If you want bhakti, you can get bhakti from Krishna consciousness movement. Just like people who are attached to the externals of Vrindavan, they can get bhakti from Vrindavan. If they want mukti, easily they can get mukti. You can get, if you want bhakti, you can get bhakti from associating with the Krishna consciousness movement. And those who want bhakti will associate with people who want bhakti. People who are using, exploiting the Krishna consciousness movement, you know, for the purpose of various types of mundane gratifications or self-aggrandizements. You know, if you want to associate with those kind of people, then there's probably plenty of such kinds of people to associate. So you have to seek out good association. And if you, but my point is that if you can't seek out, if you can't find any other good association, we have good association, but you have to have the receptivity, you have to have the intelligence. You have to be essence seeking enough. You have to be interested in giving up your own mundane, you know, attachments, etc. To actually advantage the instructions of Srila Prabhupada in a way which is, you know, let's say progressive and productive of the true, you know, goal of life. Anything else?